The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Charles Russell stars as an insurance investigator on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. We'll also hear Clem McCarthy's call of the 1947 Kentucky Derby and Hawaiian honeymoon plans on an episode of Hilltop House starring Jan Miner and Phil Sterling. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Clem McCarthy's call of the 1947 Kentucky Derby and Hawaiian honeymoon plans on an episode of Hilltop House from 1953, starring Jan Miner and Phil Sterling. Right now, Charles Russell stars as an insurance investigator on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, on an episode entitled The Racehorse Pile Driver Matter, as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
This is a horse on me. But I did find out that in A Race for Life and Death, the police laboratory is where they make the photo finish.
This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At Insurance Investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Hartford Branch, Lloyd's Underwriters Association. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of the circumstances threatening the life of the insured, the racehorse pile driver. Or, he'd have been way off his feet if I didn't know my oats. Or, it's great to get a kick out of life so long as it isn't a kick in the head. Expense account item one, 18 cents, one package of cigarettes. You may consider this a personal item, but that's where this case really started. At the cigar stand, ground floor, terminal office building, here in Hartford. I had come down in one of the elevators and noticed a little guy with a cane standing with a starter. After I passed them, I felt myself being pointed out. And not being the type who likes being followed for long periods of time, I gave myself a good reason to stop and look things over.
Hello, Mr. Dollar.
Hiya, Mac. Give me a pack of Luckies, will you?
I just sold you a pack when you came in.
I know. But things may really start smoking any minute. Here.
Good morning to you, sir. I've been led to believe that you were one Mr. John Dollar. Would that be a fact?
Yeah, I'm Dollar. What can I do for you?
Well, I am quite a famous fellow myself. Perhaps you've heard of the fabulous jockey Earl Sand?
Yeah, but...
Well, next to him, I was among the best. May I introduce myself? I'm the famous little Nettie Montana, sometimes called the short Johnny Longdon. Shake hands.
Oh, how do you do?
Now, to business. I think I have a way for you to solve my problem and make yourself an honest buck besides.
Oh, now, whoa, pony boy. You're wasting your time. I don't bet the horses, and when I do, I don't buy tips from touts.
Oh, now, wait a minute, pal. I did not introduce myself for the purpose of being insulted. I will have you know that I, too, do not consort with touts. I will thank you to keep a civil tongue in your head.
Oh, I can see this is going to be one of those days. What is your problem, mister?
Well, it is a problem best not overheard by people in the lobbies of office buildings. But this much I can tell you. It is about a horse and $50,000 insurance. That is why I came to you.
Well, I'd be richer if I'd known more about horses, and poorer if I'd known less about insurance. Maybe in this thing I can break even at least. Come on. I hope you are not too much of a purist to ride in a taxi.
Little Nettie looked like he'd stopped growing physically at the age of 14. And every once in a while, he talked like his mind had also called it quits at about the same time. The only thing slick about him was his hair. And the only thing sharp, his clothes. Liars always talk too much, and Little Nettie wouldn't say a word until we were inside my apartment. So even before he started his pitch, I half believed it.
Well, to take it from the beginning, I was born in a stable, and that's not just a figure of speech. They brought the hot water in a feed bucket, so you can understand my deep affection for horses.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, kindly consider this. Mm-hmm. One horse in particular, a very brave steed by the name of Pile Driver, has not only made me very famous, but has also made me a very large pile of hay. I have ridden Pile Driver to a win position since he was a maiden.
Pile Driver, huh? Quite a hunk of horse.
Uh-huh. Ah, you remember.
Yeah.
Then you might also remember that he was on his way to becoming one of the big money winners of all time. Until I had to go and fall off a livery stable horse while teaching a girl how to ride in Central Park. It busted up my leg, and I might add, my future. To say nothing of Pile Driver's. He hasn't won a race since I got grounded.
Yeah, well, what's all this got to do with insurance?
Mr. Dollar, they are gonna murder him.
Oh?
Can you guess why?
I can try. Pile Driver is heavily insured. He's also no longer winning races.
He's also a man who can't have a family. No good for studs.
So if Pile Driver should trip and break a leg, the owner would be entitled to shoot him and he'd still collect the insurance. I know, it's been done.
You have hit the horseshoe nail on the head. Mr. Dollar, I have a considerable bundle of money stashed away and I am willing to devote a considerable lump of it to the purpose of saving Pile Driver. Now, maybe you wouldn't understand such a thing, but I happen to love that horse.
I understand it, Nettie. Where is he?
Well, he is currently stabled at a track named Hiawatha.
Oh, by the shores of Gitche Gumee?
No, by the shores of Lake Michigan. This is located slightly north of a place called Chicago.
Five telephone calls and a few hundred questions later, I learned that Pile Driver was insured by your company. Got the assignment and was on my way. So, expense account item 2, airfare, Hartford to Chicago, $57.72. Little Nettie insisted on coming along, and he kept the hum of the plane from being humdrum as follows.
Well, Johnny, the gentleman who owns Pile Driver is an old Kentucky mint julep sponge named Colonel Faraday Bushnell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this character has a very black heart hiding beneath a head of white hair.
I see.
I trusted him until I heard him say what he was going to do. From then on, I have been seriously tempted to wrap these hands around his neck and squeeze. All I can say is he had better not hurt Pile Driver.
Expense account item 3, $16.40. Cab fare, Chicago Municipal Airport to Hiawatha Racetrack. Arrival time, 10 a.m. To me, a racetrack always smells good of horses, green grass, and excitement. Here you are, driver. Keep the change.
Well, this, as the saying goes, is it, Mr. Dollar. You will have to take it from here.
Okay.
Oh, hey, one last word of warning. Watch out for his daughter, Lila.
Well, why? Is she dangerous?
To a guy like me? No. But to a guy like you, yes.
pardon me, miss. Can you tell me where I'll find the boss around here, Colonel Bushnell?
Oh. Mm. I was just going to chase you away. But you don't look like just another hay and grain merchant. What you selling?
I'm not. I'm buying. Where's your daddy?
How do you know the colonel is my daddy?
Well, he told me he had a pretty daughter.
Oh, well, thanks. Just who are you, mister?
Well, as for the name, that's Johnny Dollar. As for my business, that's trying to buy one of your father's horses.
Well, the colonel won't be back for a little bit, but I'm bossing while he's away. I'll tell you now, I don't think he's figuring on selling any of his horses. But I'll be glad to show them to you.
Good enough. But there's only one I'm really interested in. Pile Driver.
Pile Driver? Why, no, Daddy wouldn't sell him.
Why not?
Well, he's practically one of the family. He put me through the last 2 years of college.
Do you mind if I see him anyway?
Why, no, not at all. Right over here.
Okay.
Here, baby. You have company, darling. Meet Mr. Dollar.
Hello. Quite a horse.
No, he's just a perfect deer, aren't you, Dollar? Mr. Dollar, why do you want to buy a pile driver?
Oh, he's a great horse. Got a great record.
Have you been following him lately?
Yeah. Oh, I know he hasn't been winning. That ought to make his price cheap and the odds long when he gets back running. I just happen to think I can make a winner out of him again.
But his spirit's all gone. How do you think you're going to do that?
Well, I told you, his price might go right back up.
Johnny, darling.
Hmm?
I can't help it, darling.
Hey,
kiss
wait
me.
A minute. Let go. Wait a minute.
Please, darling, please.
It was great fun. But what was it for?
Johnny, you shouldn't have, right out here in the open.
Huh?
Oh, Leo.
Yeah, what's going on?
Now, wait, Leo, honey.
This guy ain't your brother. He'll wish he was. Besides, that's no way to kiss brothers. You, get out of here.
Look, Buster, if you aren't this girl's father, you'd better start doing some wishing.
Oh, you think so, huh?
This is the roughest game of post office I ever got mixed
How
up
do you
in.
Like that, please.
Johnny, what are you doing to him?
Hammerheads like this hammerlocks. Let him get tough now and I'll bust his arm.
Gentlemen, what's going on here? You spectators there, run along now about your business. Leo, I must say I am surprised at you fighting in front of a lady.
Oh, Daddy.
Get him off of me.
Here, young man. I demand that you dismount, Mr. Corbin.
Well, sooner or later, I guess I'll have to. Now, listen, Leo. Are you paying close attention?
Yeah.
After I let you up, if you make one move except away from here, I'll give you a pair of fat ears, okay? Oh, look at the suit. I'm going to have to start wearing knee pads.
Come on, Leo, honey. Let's get away from here. I hope you're not blaming me for what happened.
I don't know.
I was
hold
just
up,
standing here.
Now, see here. I demand an explanation.
So do I. I came here to get in the horse business, and I end up in the fight racket. Who is that guy?
That gentleman, sir, is Leo Corbett, a brother horse owner. And I might do the favor of warning you that Mr. Corbett is a hard enough man in business dealings. But when it comes to my daughter, he's downright violent.
Your daughter was downright impulsive.
Maybe so. But Leo is hardly the type to stand by while some other fellow kisses his girl. And I saw that happen with my own eyes.
Well, don't let it worry you, Colonel. I didn't come here to collect lipstick samples. Well, there's one thing I can be glad about in my encounter with Mr. Leo Corbett.
What is that?
That he isn't James J. Come on, Colonel. Let's talk business. Hey, bartender.
Hey, Mr. Dollar, over here.
Oh, never mind. There's my man over there. How are you, Ninny?
Oh, I'm fine. Hey, but you, where did you catch that mouse under your eye?
Oh, I'm sharp as a trap, I am. You were so right about Miss Bushnell. She's not only dangerous, she's daffy.
Huh? I didn't know she could hit that hard.
No, she didn't. Let's just say that she has a novel way of introducing people to her boyfriend.
Oh.
You know him? Leo Corbett?
Well, if I knew any more, I'd be the racing commission's witness. He owns a string of very fast horses who run very slow until the odds get right. Then he bets him up to the brisket, wins himself a potful. It's also rumored that he is stiff competition to the Perry Mutual machines. He books big bets among the owners.
Well, they'll catch up to him sooner or later. They always do.
Amen. But about that human glue factory, my friend, the horse-killing colonel. What's with him?
Well, I offered him $60,000 for pile driver.
Huh?
That's $10,000 more than he'd get if he knocked him off and collected the insurance.
Yeah, where are you going to lay your mitts on 60 G's? I haven't got that kind of dough.
We don't need that kind of dough, little Nettie. You see, I told Bushnell that I was sending to California for my private vet and that he'd be here in 3 days. And that once he pronounced the horse sound, I'd give him the money.
Yeah, but that only means that pile driver is safe for another 3 days. And then what?
In those 3 days, it's up to me to prove intent. And if it's there, I'll prove it. And have the policy canceled. Once that's done, he'll probably be willing to peddle the horse for $10,000.
That I can handle. But in the meantime, I'm not taking any chances, see? I'm keeping Pile Driver under my own personal eye.
I wish you wouldn't, Nettie. We don't want the colonel getting suspicious.
I can't help it, Mr. Dollar. I just can't help it.
Okay, Nettie, but don't blow it. Be careful. Like all racetracks, Hiawatha was surrounded by motor courts and bungalows with rooms for rent. So, expense account item 4, $3, room rent. I set the tin alarm clock for 8 and my ear for any time and went most of the way to sleep. First things being first, I dreamed of girls. Then I dreamed of fire engines. Then suddenly, I realized why. I was hearing some. I bounced out of bed and over to the window. There I saw an incendiary sunset hanging over the racetrack stables. I jumped into my pants and into the landlady's car and got over there as fast as a 1929 Ford could take me. Hey, you. You.
What?
How'd it start?
I started looking at those tables. I don't know how, but the guards were looking for a little guy with a limp who was hanging around.
Oh, where'd he go?
I didn't see him, but I hear he ran in the fire and didn't come out. Some crank, I guess.
I had one particular horse to get to in a hurry. And I hoped, one particular guy. The door to pile driver's stall was closed and padlocked. I crowbarred the stable out of the wood with the pick end of a fire axe. Threw the door open, grabbed a lungful of fresh air, closed my eyes and slammed into the smoke. I could have been smoked to death, burned to death, or stamped to death, but I had to take the chance. Steady, yo. Whoa, whoa, pile driver. Now, take it easy. Easy, easy, boy. I whacked him on the rump with the axe handle, then dropped it. I slipped to my knees, started groping across the straw-covered floor. I knew that if there was any air in there, that's where it would be. And if there was an ex-jockey in there, that's where he would be. And that's where he was. In the first corner I tried, I crawfished backwards toward the door, dragging him inch by inch out into the clean, cold shower of fresh night air. But I could have saved myself the trip. Little Nettie Montana was dead. He'd had a horseshoe hung on his forehead, but not for luck. And all I could think of at the moment was, a jockey's best friend is not always his horse.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, may we take just a moment from tonight's Johnny Dollar story to remind you that 3 more fine adventure shows come your way each Saturday night on most of these same CBS stations. First, there are The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, based on the smart and tough Private Eye created by Raymond Chandler. Second, there's Gangbusters, one of the most famous crime shows on the air, reenacting outstanding police cases in real life. Third, there is Escape, a highly unusual adventure show which fulfills your need for escape. Hear these 3, Philip Marlowe, Gangbusters, and Escape, along with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, every Saturday night, won't you?
Tune in this fall for the shows that you love best of all.
Listen carefully.
Here's the address.
It's CBS, CBS.
Now with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Tough luck. Nice try, little Nettie.
Mr. Dollar, this is horrible. Why, it's little Nettie.
It sure is. What's left of little Nettie?
You don't...
Yeah, I mean, he's dead. You know, when I was a kid, I knew about a story with a horse and a woman in it. Helen of Troy. I should have remembered that before I tangled with you. Why don't you get lost?
Why, whatever's the matter with you?
Look, Miss Bushnell, 2 minutes after I met you, you bagged me into a fist fight with your boyfriend with a phony kiss. I don't know how much you had to do with putting little Nettie where he is, but I intend to find out.
Why, you're insane. Any fool, even you, Mr. Dollar, can plainly see that this boy's been kicked in the head by a horse.
Lila, child, what are you doing here?
Why, I saw
why?
The...
Why? Who's that on the ground? Why, it's little Nettie. Don't tell me he's dead.
What would you be if you got kicked in the head by a horse, Colonel?
Why, the poor boy. I held this lad in deep affection until just a few months back. He was my best jockey. What on earth was he doing around here at this time of night?
From all I can see, little Nettie swapped his life for pile drivers. As small as he was, it's a pretty big price to pay. Although I guess you wouldn't think so, would you?
What? What's that? I demand an explanation of precisely what you mean, sir.
I mean that to some people, a dead horse is more valuable than a live one. Too bad you can't go count your money. I gotta take my friend to the morgue. An hour later, little Nettie was resting better than I was. I'd made my report to the police and was back pacing the floor of my rented room. It wasn't a long walk. Yeah?
This is Lila Bushnell. I gotta see you right away.
Why don't you start another fire? That'll draw me.
I didn't have anything to do with that fire, but I must talk to you right away. Where can I meet you?
Have you got a car?
Yes, I'll come any place.
Now pick me up here in 20 minutes. Come alone, and we'll take a little drive to the country. I want it to be just the three of us. You and me and the Dewdrops. Dawn was making a dark gray promise in the sky when she picked me up, and a few easy-to-please birds had found something to sing about. During the first 5 miles, Lila denied everything except that she was a woman, and there was no hiding that. I had her pull in under a tree and said, "Well, then why'd you call me?"
It was something you said to my father about a horse being more valuable dead than alive.
You sold me out once. What are you planning on now? Selling out your old man? You women. You know, if the truth is ever told, it'll probably come out that Goldilocks cut her grandmother's throat to swipe the gold out of her teeth.
Please don't make fun of me.
Fun, she calls it. Well, if you got something to spill, get it off your chest.
My father owes Leo Corbett $50,000. He lost it betting on Pile Driver. Leo's been demanding his money, and Father doesn't have it. And I heard Leo practically order Father to destroy Pile Driver for the insurance.
And what did Daddy dear say to that?
He said he'd do it. But I know he wouldn't. I know he didn't set that fire.
How do you know?
I just know, that's all.
Now, that'll sound good to a jury. Why are you coming to me with all this stuff?
Because you're our only hope. Can't you buy Pile Driver right away? It would solve everything.
Everything but one thing.
What's that?
Why did you go to all that trouble to get me punched in the eye?
Oh, that?
Yeah.
I just wanted to show Leo that he wasn't going to have everything his own way. And you looked strong enough to do it.
Wow. That's a stupid answer. Why not? Makes a stupid kind of sense. She dropped me off at my rooming house where I dropped off to sleep. It was, however, only a 4-hour plunge. Expense account item 5, $650. Cab fare to headquarters, Homicide Division, Chicago Police. That's one city where the cops still wear an old-fashioned star, but they sure do operate with a new-fashioned speed. As witness, the enclosed report made by Lieutenant Craig 6 hours after filing of inquiry.
According to the findings of the autopsy, Dollar, your hunch, or whatever you call it, was right. The deceased, little Nettie, was not kicked to death by a horse. Examination of the wound reveals that it was administered by a new horseshoe. A shoe on a horse's hoof would have left traces of straw, etc. We say that the fatal weapon was swung by person or persons unknown. As you suggested, he'd have to have been standing on his head to have the horseshoe make the mark it did if the horse had kicked him.
The lieutenant had made only one mistake. He should have said person or persons known. Expense account item 6, 10 cents, 2 telephone calls. The idea I was working on, I'll give you for nothing. Expense account item 7, $650. Cab fare to administration building, Hiawatha Racetrack, where the afternoon's program was in progress, and where I got the wholehearted cooperation of the track officials and the use of a vacant office in which to hold the meeting I had set up. I sat myself in a swivel chair and waited. Come in.
Mr. Dollar, I can't tell you how happy I am that our little transaction is about to be consummated. If you have the money with you, sir, Pile Driver is yours.
Now, wait a minute, Colonel. Let's not go consummating too quickly.
But, my boy, you indicated over the telephone...
I indicated over the phone just this. I said my offer was as good as it ever was. And to tell you the truth, it's not very good.
Now, see here... Who's that?
Sit down, Colonel. Come in.
Why, Leo! What are you doing up here?
Anytime anybody shows up to hand over $60,000 to you for Pile Driver, I'm gonna be here. That's exactly what this smart guy called me up to tell me he's about to do.
Now, gentlemen, let's take it easy. Before I do anything, I want to make sure I'm not doing business with a murderer.
Sir, I demand an explanation.
What about you, Leo?
Yeah, so do I.
Well, here it is. The Chicago police know two things. One, that last night's fire was set. And two, that little Nettie was murdered. And that little Nettie got a couple of lungfuls of smoke before he got hit over the head with a horseshoe. That means that whoever hit him over the head sucked in some smoke, too.
Well, I've never heard such a pack of nonsense in my life.
What are you getting at, wise guy?
Just what I told you. I don't want to do business with a murderer, especially $60,000 worth. But I've made it easy on you to prove that you aren't. You see, I got a doctor in the next room with portable X-ray equipment. If you've got fire smoke in your lungs, it'll show up. Now, how about it?
Why, this is ridiculous.
Why don't you leave the Dick Tracy stuff to the funny papers?
Because I don't feel like laughing. Now, once more, how about it?
Get it. I still don't know what this tomfoolery is about, and I'll feel downright silly while I'm doing it, but I'm willing to take my chances.
Okay. Leo, you're first. Follow me. Turning your back on a murderer is no way to stay healthy, but very often it's a good way to get him to make his move. This one did, right out the door, knocking me down en route, and the chase was on. Out of the building, and out toward the grandstand and the racing circle.
And there they go. On the outside, Dreamy Boy by an inch. It's Brockhuster by a length, and it's Williger by a head. And at the quarter, it's Dreamy Boy.
It may have been Dreamy Boy at the quarter, and on the track, but it was my quarry by 50 lengths as he headed up an aisle into the grandstand. Dreamy Boy was still doing fine down there, and I was moving up here, but up near the top of the grandstand, and onto the ramp leading to the press box section.
And
just as Dreamy Boy hit the three-quarter, we hit the grandstand roof. And then we went into the stretch.
Hey, Corbett, it's hopeless. You can't get much farther. You're running out of roof.
I slid behind a ventilator and showed myself to draw his shots. He was lousy. If he hadn't been, he'd be dictating this with an air-conditioned elbow.
Okay, Corbett, you've had it. I've been counting your shots.
Corbett tried a few ventilators himself, and then apparently he decided the second time he fought me, he'd do better. He rushed in swinging. I was doing great, creating punches, but he finally moved inside and threw one. I ducked low, but he came up fast with his knee.
I sat down,
and he took off. Straight to the back corner edge of the pitched roof. He swung over the side and started to shinny down the 100-foot rain pipe. But that pipe was built to carry rain, not people. At the finish line of one tiny segment of the human race, it was gambler, arsonist, murderer, Leo Corbett. By a head. Expense account item 8. Dinner for two at the Shangri-La in downtown Chicago. $34.40. Dinner itself only took 40 minutes and 8 of the dollars. The rest of the evening and the money was spent listening to the story of her life. A story which would not by any means win any Pulitzer Prize, or for that matter, any husband's. But sometimes when you're interested in a girl like Lila, you have to act like you're interested in what she's saying. Expense account item 9, $57.72. Airfare, Chicago to Hartford. Item 10, $1.50. One book to read on airplane, titled How to Win at the Races. As if I just hadn't found out. Expense account total, $1,449.22. I guess you could call that horse sense. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell. Script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Bill Conrad, Dora Singleton, Jerry Hausner, Herb Butterfield, and Hal March. The special music is written and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Be sure to be with us at this same time next week when another unusual expense account is handed in by...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Those mystery adventure shows we mentioned earlier, the fun and music and fabulous jackpot of Sing It Again, and two outstanding music shows, they're on tap for you every Saturday on most of these same CBS stations. Gene Autry comes along with his sagebrush ballads, and Vaughn Monroe is due with his songs and his great orchestra. In fact, you're invited to stay tuned right now for the Vaughn Monroe Show, for it follows immediately over most of these stations. Paul Masterson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
J-E-L-L. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. The Oka pudding, yes, sirree.
Steady now. Get your legs straight there. They're off, and they got away together. Phalanx was in the clear, all right. There was hardly any interference. About the only horse that was dropped that quickly was Rescalator. Now Jet Pilot on the outside is being shot right to the front. And they've come 200 yards, and Jet Pilot is showing the way. And right behind him is Bulletproof. And as they come to us, it is Jet Pilot showing the way by a length and a half. And in second place now is Hound Trust, showing surprising speed, galloping in second place. Double J on the inside third. Cosmic Bomb is fourth and having a hard time in on the tight going around the lower turn. It is still that horse out there going right to it. And Jet Pilot showing by a length and a half. And in second place, On Trust galloping very easily, showing surprising speed. Cosmic Bomb is still third. And Double G is fourth. And then comes in order Faultless. And Liberty Road is well up there. The others, Phalanx, is in last place. Phalanx is now 13th in the field. It is still Jet Pilot showing the way by one length and a half. On Trust is second. Cosmic Bomb is third. Double J is fourth. Now Phalanx is in 10th place and going up fast and passing horses one after another. Jet Pilot is beginning to tire. On Trust is coming to him. They've got 3/8 of a mile, 600 yards to come. And it is Jet Pilot by a length and a half. And in second place is On Trust. He's beginning to hang, and coming through on the inside is Faultless. Phalanx is now in 6th place on the outside. Cosmic Bomb is coming again, but Jet Pilot is still on the lead with 1/4 mile to come. But on the outside is Faultless coming fastest of all. And as they straighten away, Jet Pilot, On Trust, Faultless, Cosmic Bomb, Phalanx, and coming through on the inside is Star Reward. It's going to be a driving finish, but they haven't got Jet Pilot yet. Jet Pilot is pulling away, and they haven't got him. Nobody's going to get him. Jet Pilot is going to be the winner. It's going to be close, but Jet Pilot is going to... No! On the up! Jet Pilot is the winner by a head. Phalanx is second by a neck. Faultless is third by a length. Untrust is fourth. Cosmic Bomb is fifth. Well, that Phalanx came with one of the most terrific rushes in the last 100 yards. He didn't appear to have a chance at the 16th pole. Was in 6th place. And suddenly he wore down and got to it. Now it's a photo finish.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio, featuring Clem McCarthy's call of the 1947 Kentucky Derby. First broadcast on WHAS Radio, May 3rd, 1947. We also heard Charles Russell as an insurance investigator on an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, Hawaiian honeymoon plans on an episode of Hilltop House from 1953, starring Jan Miner and Phil Sterling, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Alka-Seltzer, first aid for the relief of headaches, acid indigestion, and muscular aches and pains. Alka-Seltzer brings you Hilltop House. This is Sandy Becker asking if you can remember the last time you had acid indigestion. Was it last night, last week? Well, whenever it was, I'm sure it wasn't pleasant. I ask you that simply because I'd like you to remember Alka-Seltzer next time acid upset stomach comes along. You'll enjoy the fast, soothing, comforting relief that gentle, speedy Alka-Seltzer can bring. All you do is dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water, then drink the tangy, refreshing solution. Alka-Seltzer with instant alkalizing action reduces excess stomach acidity in a hurry. It makes an unsettled stomach settle down promptly, as you're feeling comfortable again in almost no time. Yes, you'll enjoy the fast, gentle action of Alka-Seltzer. So get a package of Alka-Seltzer at any drugstore. Try it next time upset stomach, heartburn, acid indigestion causes discomfort. Once you've tried it, I'm sure you'll always remember Alka-Seltzer means speedy relief from acid indigestion. And now, Hilltop House.
Julie, no. I'm sorry. That letter wasn't meant for you. I handed you the wrong one.
My heart began to beat in fright. Before Jeff took the letter from my hand, I saw it was from Dr. Bernays. So it had to be about Reed. And Jeff had sent him to this lung specialist. We were all waiting for the report of that consultation. Now I knew there was word, but for whatever the reason, Jeff wasn't willing to share the information with me. Suddenly I felt panicky, and Jeff must have realized it.
I'm sorry, Julie. How could I be so stupid as to pick up the wrong letter? I guess I didn't concentrate on what I was doing because I was answering the phone at the same time. Now, here's the letter about Marianne that I wanted you to read. It's a report from the lab about the rash, which turns out to be allergy, just as Dr. Oliver suspected. So I'm glad we followed his advice.
What did he say about Reed? Can't you tell me?
Well, there really isn't anything to tell. This is a routine letter telling me the type of tests he used and... Well, the full report will come in after the lab completes its work on those tests.
That's all?
There's nothing you should know that I'm keeping from you.
But Jeff, I thought I saw it.
What?
Something about his personal opinion.
Oh, well, that's just the exchange of views between doctors. Please take my word for it. I've nothing definite to tell you about Reed, so there's no reason for you to be worried.
But I can't help it. I'm afraid.
Because the way I handle this, stupid bungling. I'm sorry, dear. If I'd told you the letter was here, then it wouldn't be a shock now. And I didn't tell you, simply because there wasn't anything for you to know.
He's had so much suffering, so many operations. Why can't it all come to an end? Why can't he be well? Completely well again. So good about it. Acting so unconcerned and so lighthearted. Tries to spare me any...
We'll have him well again, Julie. This isn't the time for either of you to be so anxious. Now, take my advice and put it out of your mind. Just think about the wedding, the honeymoon. And forgive me for making a stupid mistake. will you?
Of course, Jeff.
Thanks.
Hey, what do I see who's kissing my bride?
Me, and I'll do it again.
Come here, Nina.
Ooh, with pleasure.
You watch it, Nixon. She's my wife.
And next week, Julie will be my wife.
Yeah, but until then.
Hey, let's go into the living room, everybody, where the drinks are. We'll toast the bride and groom.
Right, we're not entertaining in my office.
Oh, and I've got a job for you, Jeff.
See what it's like to be married, Reed? Little jobs all around, waiting for the tired husband to handle.
Well, if you can't open a jar of olives.
You can't scare me with a jar of olives. Marriage looks good.
Come on, Jeff. We've got to have the olives with the canopies. Pretty please, open the jar for me.
Be right back.
What's the matter, Julie?
Hi.
Oh, you can do better than that for me.
Nice to see you, darling. It always is.
Well, that's a lot better. You look very pretty, sweetheart.
So do you.
Here, I've brought you some literature to read.
Oh, travel folders.
I was on the phone with a travel agency in Chicago just before I came over. He's trying to sell me on Honolulu. How does that appeal to you as a honeymoon haven?
Honolulu?
Mm-hmm. In Hawaii. Very romantic, soft summer breezes, beautiful beach, beautiful brown-skinned dancing girls and grass skirts.
You ever been there?
I've been reading the travel literature. Sounds good to me. Do you go for the idea?
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to go there.
Well, we've been talking about Europe. We can still make reservations if you prefer.
No. No, I really think Honolulu's better. It'd be a lot more restful. Europe would mean a lot of moving around, and no, my vote is for grass skirts in Honolulu.
Okay, I'll tell them to go ahead. So now we're all set for the honeymoon.
How long should we be away?
A month, anyhow, okay?
Mm-hmm. And how are we going?
Oh, by plane. We can stop over in San Francisco for a couple of days. You ever been there?
Mm-hmm. I lived in California for a long time. You know that.
Oh, that's right.
San Francisco's a beautiful city, and I'd love to see it again.
Whatever you want, I want. I've brought a couple records over. Where'd I put them? Oh, here. Some honeymoon music.
What?
Now, where do you hear? How do you work this machine?
Oh, I know how. Let's see, you turn this knob.
Mm-hmm.
And this one. And then you put the switch on here. And then put the record on. And then you release this.
Couldn't be simpler.
Very.
Anything more you want done, Mrs. Browning?
No. Why was Julie so upset?
I think we'd better forget everything except our party, Nina.
Did you show her that letter from Dr. Bernays? Is that why?
Nina, what's got into you? I wouldn't show Julie any letter or tell Julie anything about a patient.
Even when that patient is the man she's going to marry?
No. There's nothing to tell, anyhow.
Well, I know what I'm seeing, and something's got Julie down. And she was talking with you.
We're going to join our guests and toast the bride and groom, okay?
You in on some honeymoon music.
Is that what you're getting for your honeymoon? Records? You better do better than that by my cousin.
Are you doing all right?
Come on, we're ready for the toast.
Well, I hope this punch is good. I mixed it according to a prize recipe.
Here we are.
Will you make the toast, Jeff?
Sure thing. To the bride and groom, an abundance of all good things every day of your married life.
Good health and good fortune.
Well, isn't that nice? Do I hear a boy?
Don't look now, but I see a pair of blue eyes peeking around the corner.
Hi there, laddie boy. Come on in and join the party.
Laddie!
Oh, look at that kid.
Laddie, what have you got on? And why aren't you in your crib?
He's got all dressed up for the party. What a boy.
Wearing one of your ties.
Hey, how old is this small fry to get himself decked out in a tie?
Why, he's 2 and a half.
Don't encourage him, Reed. He should be in his crib sleeping. Why did you get up?
He can't hear a word, Nina.
Did we wake him up?
Oh, go away. He knew a party was coming, so he just stayed up for it. Well, what do you have, laddie?
Drink.
Okay.
Jeff, don't. He can't have this punch.
Sure he can. It's good for him. Have a drink, pal.
That won't hurt him, Nina.
I'll make him happy with a piece of ice. Here you are, boy.
Ice.
Cold, huh?
This is just fine. I never knew a child who could get so wide awake at bedtime.
He wants to join in the fun. How about dancing, pal?
You'll make it easier for me if you don't make him feel so welcome.
Aren't you interested in that crib at all?
Well, let him stay up for a while. Here, young fella, have an olive.
Jeff, you're impossible.
Yeah, he likes stuff that's salty.
And you'll have him thirsty for the rest of the night, Jeff.
Oh, you don't like it, huh? Well, try a potato chip.
Where's the pipsqueak I got at home with the size of this one?
Oh, well, now that's the darlingest baby. He's going to have golden curls.
Well, my cousin Tommy was blonde, so the kid will take after him.
Boy, girl.
Oh, he thinks we're talking about him.
Well, aren't you a smart one?
Come on now, laddie. You've had your party. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.
No.
Good night.
Good night.
I'll put him in the crib. He knows when I mean business.
Well, you've done okay by this punch, Nina. Let's have another toast.
Oh, not the kind you get for breakfast. Oh, I'll answer that. Now, stay in your crib, pal.
Jeff!
I'll answer the telephone, Nina. Don't bother. Dr. Browning? Oh, hold on, please. Okay, now I can talk. Yes, I have your letter, Doctor. Mr. Nixon's in my house right now. We're having a small dinner party. Yes? Yes. You're confirming the diagnosis. The test's positive. Early stages. I guess there's nothing more to say. Yes, yes, it is a shock. He's a personal friend as well as a patient. Thank you for letting me know so quickly. Goodbye, Doctor.
We're ready to serve the... Jeff, what's the matter?
Bad news about a patient. I thought I had a chance to save him.
In just a moment, we'll return to our story of Hilltop House. Isn't it sometimes the case your day is going like clockwork, dishes out of the way, house clean, shopping finished, then just as you're about to sit down and enjoy a moment of relaxation, a headache comes along? Well, honest, ladies, you can enjoy, yes, enjoy, the fast, effective relief that Alka-Seltzer brings from a headache. Relief is prompt because Alka-Seltzer contains an effective pain reliever, sodium acetyl salicylate, one of the most helpful and useful pain relievers known to modern medical science. And tests prove the system absorbs more of the pain reliever faster from Alka-Seltzer. Yes, and relief is gentle, pleasant. Alka-Seltzer doesn't upset your stomach while it eases your headache. So don't ever be without the friendly help of speedy Alka-Seltzer. Get a package today at any drugstore. Then count on Alka-Seltzer when you want fast, effective relief from a headache. And now we'll return to our story for a moment. As Nina watched her husband's stricken face, she murmured,
Do you mean Reed? I'm afraid to ask.
Be sure to tune in tomorrow to another exciting episode of Hilltop House, written by Addie Richton and Lynn Stone. Julie is played by Jan Miner, and Phil Sterling is Reed. Tell me, which foods provide the most necessary vitamins? Fruits, green vegetables, meats? It's hard to tell, isn't it? And it's hard to know whether you're getting enough vitamins each day to prevent vitamin shortage. But you can be sure by taking one-a-day brand multiple vitamin tablets regularly each day. Take one-a-day brand multiples because they provide all you normally need to take of all the vitamins proved necessary. That's important. All the vitamins you normally need to keep fit. You'll also like one-a-day brand multiple vitamins because they're in tablet form. Smooth-coated tablets with no unpleasant aftertaste. So make it every day for one-a-day brand multiple vitamin tablets. The vitamins in the blue box with the big red one. Get one-a-day brand multiple vitamin tablets with vitamin B12 added at all drugstores. Listen to Hilltop House tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday. Sandy Becker speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change your hair for me, not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine. Stay. Each day is Valentine's Day.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Chet Baker with My Funny Valentine from 1954. We also heard an episode of Hilltop House starring Jan Miner and Phil Sterling, first broadcast on radio on July 20th, 1953. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.